You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
No, not at all. It's not Todd. It's not Todd. But I believe I am contractually obligated to say the following. Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Pat Kreitlow, host of the conveniently named Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on select stations along the Civic Media Radio Network, accompanied by the Count of the Control Room, the Baron of the Control Board, the Viceroy of the Volume Knobs, the one and only Aaron Zommers.
Wow.
Mr. Zommers, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. That's a whole bunch of new titles. I feel like Todd used to do a lot of different adjectives, but he has settled on a couple. So this will have to make him step up his game again.
I figured, yeah, you're like radio royalty here now. You've been around long enough. You've earned some titles. And as further proof that I should not go unsupervised, allow me to introduce this hour's co-guest host, part of the riffraff of River Falls, a proud alum of Badger Boy State 1985, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, and creator of the next newsletter you need to be subscribing to, Search for Hope with Trigvi Olson. It's Trigvi Olson. I think it is.
I know.
You look a little different there. Something's different, and not just the way you crushed that Red Bull just now, but apparently you're spending your time now with Red Bulls and razor blades. How you are as clean shaven, like all over. I mean, where's Telly Savalas to hand you a lollipop? This is really a new look.
It's true. Yeah, you know, it's summer out in D.C., and it gets so hot, Pat. I couldn't do the bushy beard. So I got rid of it. It made the big one happy. The young one was really disappointed I got rid of the beard, but it will grow back. That's
okay.
The thing.
There were no tears. No, I don't know who you are anymore. Anything like that. So
no, and you can't look like it's deer hunting season year round.
Well, some in Wisconsin would disagree, but, you know, that's
true.
That's on them. Trigvi, as I mentioned, has the newsletter, the blog, Search for Hope, and the newest series. He does serials like this. Like, you know, here's our latest 10-part series. This new one is 10 Lessons for the Resistance in a Fear-Based System that we will have to be looking into here. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. We will also talk about budget bills, plural, with the one thing in common, Republicans in disarray. No budget bills yet in Washington, D.C. or in Madison as the Republicans try to get their ducks in a row, more like herding cats, pick your animal, you know, analogy from there. So on the state level, to get an update on where things stand, we're going to talk to Democratic State Senator Kelda Royce. Why Democratic State Senator Kelda Royce? Because it could be that Senate Republicans can't get all 18 of their ducks in a row. And if they want to pass a budget, they may have to find a way to attract some Democratic votes as well. We'll see if that's really happening or if it's not. But of course, at the federal level, we have, again, what's called the Vote-a-Rama going on, a bunch of amendments to the bill in the U.S. Senate, and its first political casualty. Folks who listened to my show this morning know that we talked to my friend Michael McElroy, a Courier Newsroom colleague of mine from our North Carolina outlet, about Senator Tom Tillis, who on Saturday was a rebel standing up to Donald Trump and saying, no, these Medicaid cuts are going to be devastating to my state. So he voted no on a procedural vote. And by Sunday, he was packing his bags and saying, oh, would you look at the time? I can't possibly run for reelection. Michael McElroy told us that was still surprising. He was going to face a tough reelection next year, but still surprising that he made for the exits. Trigvi Olson, as Todd would say, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the truth of the matter is, let's talk about why Tom Tillis isn't running, right? Like, he's not running again because he will lose in a primary in a state like North Carolina, because he stood up really for the citizens of North Carolina. I think the thing that people are missing with the big, beautiful bill, I was on a call earlier today, is starting beyond, I mean, you can talk about the tax cuts for billionaires and the fairness issue and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, it's going to have real world consequences, particularly with healthcare in rural areas in places like Wisconsin and North Carolina. And in Tillis's case, he was saying this is wrong and there is an, you know, he has no choice but to exit or probably to lose in a primary for standing up what was right for North Carolina. I mean, it's crazy.
It is. I mean, and he's not the only one who knows that if anybody says, you know, everybody who deserves their Medicaid benefits won't see, how did Derek Van Orden put it? You won't see your benefits cut a nickel. Tom Tillis knows, and some of his colleagues know but won't say, that is straight up gaslighting. You know, and I am sure you have seen it in some of the other nations you've worked in, where, you know, the ruling party says, oh, no. The sky is indeed, you know, purple. It's not blue.
Right.
And, you know, if you don't believe me, well, there's the gulag, you know. They just want to say it enough times to make people believe it. And Trigview, you know this as well as I do. You know, they need just enough people to believe that their big bloated boondoggle will save money when it will not. It has such a price tag for a generation to come.
Well, and they need people to be afraid of saying what they think, right, Pat? So it isn't just that they need enough people. They need people to be afraid to even have the conversation. And, you know, we have seen some of that. You know, you think about in places like Chippewa Falls or River Falls, for that matter, right? Like, you go down to Johnny's Bar in River Falls, you don't want to have a conversation about politics. And if politics comes up, people are holding their tongues, even if they want to say something, because they start thinking, well, it isn't worth saying anything. And when you have, you know, somebody like Tom Tillis, who's a United States senator, who's basically doing that same thing, that's a problem, because that is what autocratic forces try and do. And, you know, I have seen that all over the world.
I don't know. Let's play What's Worse, which is not the one that Todd's going to play later. Todd will be back in the 3 o'clock hour, and he'll have a What's Worse roundabouts or traffic lights edition. But let's play our own special version of What's Worse. A Republican senator saying what he thinks, but only when he's making for the exits, or a Republican senator making noise like they're going to stand up, but then accepting some kind of a sweetheart deal that we find about later, which in the case of Lisa Murkowski of Alaska was going to be some kind of a carve out for, I believe it was for rural hospitals or something like that. And again, you know, good job on you batting for your state. But don't lecture me on earmarks and the bridge to nowhere and all the other corruption if you're still doing it as much as ever. Trigvi, what's worse?
Well, I would say, first off, Tom Tillis and senators not saying what they really think until they're headed for the exits, or equally saying it behind closed doors and then staying in the Senate and doing the wrong thing, right? I think in Murkowski's case, you know, there's a long history of that, right? Like, you know, there was the whole period where you would get, you know, like, you think about why in Virginia, I was thinking about this recently, we were driving down to see William and Mary with my daughter as a school she might go to, and you get down by Norfolk and all those military bases, John Warner got all of those when he was head of the Armed Services Committee, right? Like, you go around the United States, there's all this stuff built by senators. I'm not so sure that that carve out is the, you know, that's kind of the way the legislative process has worked. But it does raise an interesting question for people in Wisconsin. Like, Ron Johnson's been all in on the big, beautiful bill. Why hasn't he held out to get some carve outs for Wisconsin hospitals.
Well, we wonder
when their mother in Marshfield can't go to the hospital because there is no hospital, they should be asking why Ron Johnson didn't play the game better.
We wondered that this morning when I made the case that somebody needs to understand how important it is to take Ron Johnson to go spelunking, because if there's one thing he loves, it's caving. And he did it again after standing up and saying, oh, no, this won't do. He has caved now, and apparently caved because he's going to get even more Medicaid cuts, more health care cuts to the Affordable Care Act and things like that. I don't believe it, because when he caved 8 years ago, he caved only after he got a sweetheart tax deal for pass-through corporations, and he benefited financially from that by his own admission. I don't think it's just enough to get Ron Johnson to you know, change his mind because a few more orphanages are going to be closed. There's got to be something there for him, don't you think?
Yeah, probably. I mean, Ron is kind of all about Ron. You know, the amazing part about Ron Johnson is everybody I've known who's ever worked for him can't stand him. It's true.
Please don't interview my Capitol staff. I'm asking you.
I find that hard to believe, Pat, actually. And this is, you know, I want to ask you something. Like, when you ran for office and when you were in the state Senate, right?
Yeah.
You weren't running to, you ran as a Democrat, but you weren't running to represent the Democratic Party.
No.
You're running to represent the Chippewa Valley.
Yes.
And there's all these people now who seem to be just running to either represent themselves or their party. And it's so antithetical to what our entire system is supposed to be about.
Well, it's because, again, in my own view, what has happened with the Republican Party is it has lost its way in terms of governing, in terms of service. There was always traditionally two parties that wanted to govern, two parties that wanted to solve problems. But now one of them has taken either a mix of fiscal conservatism and social conservatism and has become antithetical to government, hostile to government, does not want to raise spending a penny to keep up with inflation because they don't want to be accused of, you know, raising money. And when you don't want to solve problems anymore, when you just want to be in power for the sake of power, I think you've lost your way. And I want to believe that it's not forever, that we're going to see a new generation of people who decide to go with the Republican Party because they are service-minded, but they still want services delivered efficiently. They don't want, you know, free bus rides like the nominee for the mayor of New York City wants, you know, that everybody should still have to pay a little bit of bus fare and all the other little things that we can disagree on, but we're not there yet with the Republicans of the future. I hope they're out there.
I don't know that that's going to happen. I think about it generationally, right? Like, mm-hmm. So, I mean, the weird thing in some ways for me is I came of age with, you know, because the Paul Ryans, the Scott Walkers, the Robin Bosses, all of us have known each other since high school, right? College, politics, you, whatever.
You did. Don't lump me into that. I'll let Trigvy finish that thought about where we're going with the modern Republican Party after we stop for a commercial break here. And
it's all about wanting to be or do.
There you go. So we'll come back and talk more about that after the break. Todd will be back in the next hour, but for the moment, this is the Todd Alba Show with Pat Kreitlow and Trigvy Olson here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Now, like Todd, I believe I'm supposed to talk right up until the break. So pardon me if I say, here's the end of the music now.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Well, we change things up over at the morning show, so you don't hear Stevie Ray Vaughan at the top of every hour the way you used to, but you can still hear it right here whenever Pat Kreitlow is showing up on the Todd Alba Show, usually on Wednesdays, but filling in for an hour here on this Monday, along with another one of those familiar Wednesday voices, Trigvy Olson of the Lincoln Project, filling in for an hour while Todd takes care of some family business. Put it that way. Aaron, has Todd talked about the nature of his absence previously? Because I don't want to steal any of his thunder.
I don't know if he's really talked about it on air.
Okay.
We've talked about it a lot off air, but I'm sure he'll, okay. I'm sure he will explain what's going on.
I know he will. It's nothing serious. It's actually kind of funny the way that he's taking care of his family. But we'll leave that story for him coming up after the 3 o'clock news. Off the text line, Jim in Brookfield. Hello, Pat. Always great to hear your voice and hosting the show mid-afternoon, though now I have an urge to sip on a warm cup of coffee. Maybe an iced coffee on a summer day will do the trick. Thank you, Jim from Brookfield. And from Len in Madison, it seems Ron Johnson is another taco with a few different ingredients. I guess that would be Jayco. Johnson always chickens out, something like that. I mean,
I like the spelunking, though.
I like the spelunking better for caving all the time. Hey, a personal point of personal privilege over here. If I'm going to be over here, I'm going to say a few kind things about my day gig, which is Up North News. I'm the founding editor of Up North News. You can find us over at upnorthnewswi.com. We've got newsletters for every day of the week. Click subscribe in the top banner. I write a special politics edition on Sunday mornings, known as Sunday Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Crazy how that happens. And then, you know, during the weekdays, you can hear Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. You can get our weekday newsletter. And we have a sports newsletter on Saturdays as well. Get it all at upnorthnewswi.com. Let me play one clip here, and then Trigvi and I will go back to talking about, you know, governing versus being versus doing. But let's hear from LaTanya Johnson talking to Matt Smith from WISN-TV on the Upfront program over the weekend about whether Senate Republicans are going to need the votes of Democratic state senators in order to pass a budget. Here's a little 30-second clip from that with Senator Johnson talking about the kinds of things that would need to be in a budget bill if it were going to attract Democratic votes.
We are making sure that we stand up for the things that are important to all of the residents in the state of Wisconsin. We heard special education, period, prison reform, all of those things are what this state wants to see, and we're determined to see some of those things get in the budget, especially child care.
If the governor says yes to a broad overarching deal, is that good enough for you to say yes?
Well, it depends on what the budget looks like as a whole. I think everybody is waiting to see what the final process is.
And I like that because, again, having been in that position, the question he's asking is so unfair. It's the right question to ask, but it's, you know, if the governor says it's good enough and he'll sign it, you know, you're going to have to vote yes on this. And no legislator likes to feel like, you know, the governor is bullying them into a yes or no vote. Trigvi, you've certainly seen that in the state capitol as well, where everybody wants the power to do whatever they want, but there's always a majority leader, a minority leader, or a governor right there.
George P. Tech.
George P. Tech, yes.
The Brewer Stadium. I was in Tommy's office at, I don't know, it's like 3 a.m. when P. Tech went the other way. That was the end of George P. Tech, too.
It was, yeah. And I know Todd, I think Todd has told the story. I told the story as relayed to me by the late Mike Ellis, about when somebody goes against their leader at like whether it was 3 or 5 a.m, whatever it was to get that stadium built, it's kind of the nightmare scenario for every leader that's out there. But, you know, some folks want to be maverick enough. Not everybody can be a John McCain. I'm looking at you, Mitt Romney, who had the ability to be the maverick for this session, but that just ain't the way it's working out. As far as the state budget goes, we're looking to talk to Senator Kelda Royce in our next segment all about that. But Trigvi, I interrupted you with that commercial break when you talked about whether the Republican Party is going to come back and people who actually have a service mindset and not just a, you know, I knew the reporters that used to work at the TV station. I knew which ones right away wanted to be journalists and which ones just wanted to be on TV. And you get that same thing in politics.
100%, you know, and actually it was a really good lesson early on. You know, whether you like Tommy Thompson or not, it's really irrelevant to the story. But Tommy used to always talk about that there were two kinds of politicians, those who want to be and those who want to do. And you wanted to be one of those who wanted to do things. And you saw that in what his approach to governing was, right? Like he was going to cut deals with whoever he could cut deals with, Paulie Williams, whoever. But there's an entire generation of, and this, you know, I use Scott Walker as the example of this. That guy was at Badger Boy State running for governor of the state of Wisconsin or president of the United States at Badger Boy State. And everybody who was there knew. In fact, we were all like, you know, a bunch of us were trying to figure out how we'd get the girls from Ripon College out behind a dorm room, which we weren't very successful at since we were just a bunch of high school boys. But like, and then you had Scott Walker, he was running for president. Like, they just want to be. And yeah. When you want to be rather than want to do, the ends to be justifies any means, and you sell your soul, you know? You take the 30 pieces of silver. I'm sure Scott will get that analogy.
Who was not nearly as successful running for president as I'm sure you were with some of the fine individuals there in Ripon by probably talking about whether to be or to do or right. Shooby dooby doo, whatever it is that you said to woo them. Mark and Prairie du Sac, if you can hang on, we're going to talk to State Senator Kelda Royce first, and then we'll look for your call and any others that have come in. But we're going to get back to talking about the state budget and whether Democrats are going to play a role. Are they being welcomed to the table, and are they being so because they actually have ideas Republicans want to hear, or it's a matter of convenience to try to avoid the most extreme of their members there in the Republican caucus? It is the Alba Show on a Monday afternoon. Todd's back after the 3 o'clock news. I'm here with Trigvi Olson. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Filling in for a guy so talented, it takes two guest hosts to fill in for him. It's Pat Kreitlow and Trigvi Olson filling in for Todd Alba for 1 hour and 1 hour only. At least, Lord willing, and a fair wind blowing, he will be back after the top of the hour to take the 3 o'clock hour from there. But while we're here and he takes care of other commitments, we are thrilled to welcome in State Senator Kelda Royce from Madison. Senator Royce, hello. How are you?
I'm so happy to be with you both.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. Let's just go right for, you know, anything new. I mean, the workday is all of, you know, 8 hours old or something like that. has Devin Lemieux, the Senate Republican leader, has he come calling yet to ask for your vote to help get a budget bill across the finish line? Where are we at?
Well, not mine, but, you know, today is the day that the budget is supposed to be passed by law, right? So as I've been saying all along, we are behind schedule and Republicans have been dragging their feet, not prioritizing this with their kind of on again, off again, unwillingness to negotiate. That said, I do think, you know, there's cautious optimism that we might pass a budget this week. Both the Senate and the Assembly are being called in to session this week. And I think governor and legislative leaders have said that they are hopeful pass a budget this week. We just have to see, is it going to be a good budget? Well, it's not going to be a good budget. Will it be a horrible budget, or will it be a pretty bad budget, but with some things we can live with?
Well, it's because we've got in both Madison and Washington, D.C., you've got extremists in the GOP caucus that want to cut even more in the, well, they say in the name of fiscal conservatism, but of course, then all the money goes out the door in tax cuts to the very wealthy. And then
right, adding $5 trillion to the deficit. You don't get to the national debt. You're not, you're
no
not
lecturing. You're not going to lecture on fiscal conservatism at all. And so, you know, here comes the prospect of, you know, wanting to have some Democratic votes to pass. But if that's going to happen and get something done this week, it means that Republican leadership, along with setting two or three extremists off to the side, are going to have to agree to a few things. We heard a little bit of it from LaTanya Johnson in the last segment here when she was on up front over the weekend. But let's ask what else would have to be in a package like that for, you know, for you to vote yes on it. It's not enough just for Governor Evers to say, come on, do me a favor and vote for this. It's got to have some stuff in there. I'm betting childcare is somewhere near the top of that list.
It sure is. And, you know, I have to say, the budget that Senator Markwein has already voted for is really horrendous. It continues this horrible cycle where our schools get shortchanged and then property taxpayers are having to raise their own taxes to make up the difference and to keep our schools' doors open. He has the budget that he voted for has $0 in general school aid's increase. And at a time of rising costs, that's functionally a cut. And every budget that he's provided over, he has shortchanged our kids. And it shows in his own school districts. He's had schools closing. He has put his districts in impossible positions, and our kids are not getting what they need. And so what I'm hoping is that as we bring this budget to the floor, there's a way to make it better so that we can have more money going into our schools so that all of our kids can thrive and learn. We have to make sure that childcare is funded. The governor's been very clear about that. He's not going to sign a budget that doesn't give direct payments to childcare providers to help stabilize that industry and keep parents in the workforce. And of course, we can't have a cut to UW. In fact, we need to be investing in the universities of Wisconsin because we've had too many campus closures in recent years.
Well, and that's where I'll turn things over to Trigvi over here, the pride of River Falls and the UW system for another question or two, Trigvi.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that back long ago when I was working in the state of Wisconsin, right, during the Tommy Thompson era, one of the things that would get talked about a lot by Tommy was, you know, budgets are about what your priorities are, right? And uh-huh. We might disagree back then about what the priorities are. I mean, what are their priorities in this? Because it clearly isn't education. It's not the UW system, which is the driver of the workforce. Like, what would you... What are they prioritizing here?
It's not the economy, because the decisions they're making are going to hurt our economy. It's not lowering costs for families, because the decisions they're making are actually going to raise costs on families. I would say the Republicans, both here and in Washington, have been focused on one thing, and that is more tax breaks and giveaways for the wealthiest among us, for millionaires and billionaires, for big business, and the rest of us get to pay the cost. And when you look at this bill in Washington, we talked a lot about how many millions of people are going to lose their health insurance. And that's devastating because all of us are going to pay higher rates. And we're going to see hospital closures in really rural parts of the state. But what doesn't get talked about enough is the fact that you and I are going to be paying more in taxes so that Elon Musk and Donald Trump can get millions of dollars in tax breaks that they wouldn't even notice. It's just an incredible wealth transfer from working Americans to the very, very wealthiest, to the, you know, 0.5 of 1%. And that is what they care about over and above every other priority that Wisconsinites have.
And the irony is a lot of them aren't even from that class.
Right. It's not like there's some economic theory that's helpful. Like it is not, right? We know that actually shrinks the economy. It does not give us the kind of broad growth that having a strong middle class would do.
Can you share your reaction to the state Supreme Court ruling on the governor's veto powers? I spoke at length last week about how, and again, I did not go to law school, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for the progressive justices. But if you were asking me to pick that opinion versus what the lower courts wrote about the governor's veto powers, I know which side I would have come down on, but I just wanted to know your reaction overall to basically the governor being hamstrung as Republicans try to play some games with how they allocate funds.
Well, yeah, and as a lawyer, I have not yet read that decision because I've been
a little tied up
in budget papers. I think that the governor in Wisconsin does have very, very broad veto powers, and it's always been understood that he has very, very broad veto powers. But the problem is we've got Republicans playing games with that. And, you know, the Republicans were just smacked down several times by our Supreme Court for their overreach for violating separation of powers and doing unconstitutional activities as it relates to the Attorney General and as it relates to other state agencies. So I would say, you know, clearly the court is not acting as a partisan, divided body as the Republicans have charged it with. A lot of these decisions are 7-0 or 6-1. And, that's probably a healthy thing for the court, even when we might disagree with an individual decision.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, they're clear on trying to follow the law as the law is written. It's just that the law right now is being used in ways I think the original authors did not foresee. I'm thinking specifically of leaving well over 100 confirmations in the state Senate. You know, that is an absolute corrupt use of the advise and consent process. And I just worry that they're going to do the same thing with budgeting now, where, you know, if it's okay for them to give money instead of, say, to DPI, to put it instead into their own Joint Finance Committee supplemental fund, you know, that this thing's just going to become one big slush fund, you know, if they get the chance to do that. I fear they will.
Right. And I think it's, you know, really important when we have political actors acting in a lawless manner, like we have in Washington with Republicans, and like the Republicans have sometimes acted here in Wisconsin, that courts be willing to confront that and not sort of put blinders on and say, well, you know, we expect everyone to act like they're the founding fathers and be on their best behavior, because we just know that's not true, right? We have, we've seen just absolutely outrageous, unlawful activity being done, especially at the federal level, when you look at the abuses by ICE and other agencies. And we have to have courts standing up for all of our rights. And this really is about Wisconsinites having the right to have their will be affected by government, right? To get the things that we want and we need. And the governor is fighting for us to have those things in the budget, and the Republicans are trying to thwart him. So we've got to have courts face that reality, and we have to do our best to try to make sure that the legislature can change that dynamic.
We are talking to State Senator Kelda Royce from Madison about the Joint Finance Committee and the work on the state budget. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Trigvi Olson, filling in for Todd Alba for this hour. So where do we go from here, especially given that there still isn't a federal plan yet that passes? We don't know their full impact on Medicaid. We know they would love to do things like, you know, defund all Medicaid to Planned Parenthood, and what that would do to small, you know, clinics all across Wisconsin. How much more difficult is this because of the uncertainty in Washington right now?
Well, I think it's very difficult, because what Republicans are doing is going to devastate communities all over the state, and not just, you know, big urban communities like Madison or Milwaukee or Green Bay, but small rural communities and even suburban communities. So all of us are going to be negatively impacted if this horrible big bill goes through in Washington. It's going to make state budgeting very, very difficult, because we're going to have millions of people potentially losing their health care. And that means they're not going to be able to work in the same way. It means we're going to be facing the closure of rural hospitals and nursing homes, which are only sort of kept afloat by Medicaid. And that's going to have a really significant impact on all of us who have private insurance too, because there's going to be a lot more uncompensated care, and our rates are going to go up because we're going to have to sort of pay that cost indirectly. So there are big economic consequences for that. And as a member of the legislature, I really want to think about how can we keep families able to make their ends meet, right? We want to be lowering costs for people on groceries, healthcare, utilities, prescription drugs, the housing, like the core things that matter. And yet my Republican colleagues don't care about any of that. They have rejected every proposal that we have offered to try to lower costs for families. And it leaves me really concerned with what's going to happen when their taxes go up so that Elon Musk and the Trumps can get more tax breaks.
I got less than 2 minutes left. Trigvi, you got one good final quick question for Senator Kelda Royce?
Maybe it's more of a comment. I think at the end of the day, from the, you know, and I say this as a former Republican, a lot of what's being gutted is the things that make Wisconsin so unique. And when they go off about, you know, the university being a woke den of indoctrination, in River Falls, Wisconsin, it's where our nurses and our teachers go to school, right? Uh-huh. It's just, they're distracting with cultural issues, but they're really gutting the things that make Wisconsin great, the heart of the small communities and the larger ones. And I just think Democrats have a real case to make to people, because there are a lot of people across rural Wisconsin who've been voting for this, who don't really realize. And when they're having to drive 3 hours to get an MRI, maybe they will. But it's just gutting what has made the state great.
Yeah, and it's where you need people like Senator Kelda Royce on the front line fighting for this, communicating 100%. These values to folks on the Joint Finance Committee and in the full legislature. Senator Kelda Royce, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for allowing us to pinch hit for Todd. Let's get you back on the morning show real soon, you crazy early risers, and we'll talk again real soon.
Sounds good. Thank you both.
All right, Kelda, thank you so much. When we come back, we've got a couple of phone callers standing by to comment on probably both the state budget and the federal budget as they continue to be, shall we say, messy. Republicans in disarray in D.C. and Madison. Who'd have thought we'd be using that headline, right? This is the Todd Albaugh Show. Pat Kreitlow, Trygve Olson here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This song was not chosen to mock Trygve Olson for shaving off his beard, but... if you were watching us on video, you'd probably run back to your radios right away. But these two handsome gentlemen are on your screen anyway for another 7-8 minutes or so before Todd Albaugh takes back control of his own show. It got real dark here real fast in Chippewa Falls up here on Lake Wissota. So I pulled up the radar, and along with it is a special weather statement that a strong thunderstorm is about to impact Dunn and Chippewa counties here before too much longer. There's already a strong line of thunderstorms stretching from Ironwood, Michigan, down through Hayward and Trigo, and down not too far from Grantsburg. So, folks, if you're there, again, no severe warnings out yet, but... things are going to rumble, not in the way it was this past weekend when the Blue Angels were in town for the Chippewa Valley Air Show. That was a different kind of thunder altogether, but that was a nice way to spend the weekend. Trygve, what about the 4th of July weekend for you? What will you be doing?
Yeah, we're just hanging out. We're not going to do much. I never go down to the mall for the fireworks. We always go over to the Arlington fireworks, which is smaller. But no, we're kind of getting ready. You know, my wife and kids go over to Europe to see her parents every summer for a period. So they're leaving right after. So yeah, not too much. All right. On the weather thing, Pat, people got to be careful with that. You know, my sister was just up by Bemidji. She had her daughter was going to camp up at Bemidji, and she and her husband were staying in their camper just outside of Bemidji, and a storm came through, straight line winds, and one of the trailers right next to theirs, thankfully the people got out, but a tree fell down and took out their camper.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was a terrible,
it could have killed them. If they hadn't woken up, it would have killed them.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Couple of callers standing by. Mark and Prairie du Sac. Let's start with you. Good afternoon, Mark. Nice to hear from you again.
Yeah. Good afternoon. Yeah. What's galling to me is, you know, Rick Scott is demanding for more cuts of Medicaid. Ron Johnson probably is demanding getting more cuts from Medicaid. And here are people that are extremely wealthy. I mean, and Rick Scott, let's remember, the largest Medicare fraudster in history at one point in time, that's 75 times taken the Fifth Amendment. And the simplest solution for all this is start increasing the top tax rates again to up what they were. I mean, maybe just some of the lower tax rates to give the people down at the bottom a tax cut. Because where are any of these rich people going to go? Are they going to go to Europe? Because the tax rates over there are much higher than they are here. I mean, that it is just galling to me that hurting the poorest among us is their solution for this big barbaric bill that they want to get through. And it is just beyond me where you know, that nobody seems to be making that argument, you know, on the Republican side of the aisle at all, that you know, maybe we should be thinking about the poorest among us, you know, like in the Bible that Jesus commands us to do. I mean, that's the one thing that can block you from getting into heaven, if you refuse to take care of the poor and your fellow man and the stranger, you know, that's, you know, kind of a bar to getting into heaven. And I'm surprised none of the Republicans want to recognize that at all.
Yeah, I never hear that part of the New Testament very much out of their mouths there, Mark. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Jack and Merrimack, we've got you on the line as well. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, thanks. First of all, not only are Republicans loving the Bible, they're also loving the Constitution, but they seem to forget a little thing that is called the preamble, which explains why we have a constitution in the first place. And one of the provisions in the preamble is to promote the general welfare. And I believe that's a direct quote, the welfare of the billionaires. Now, no. The Republicans are real good at simple messages. So I got a simple message. And that is, if you put a 2% tax on people with 30 million or more, graduated up to 5% at a billion or more. And you could raise from that money about $2 trillion every single year. That would be enough, of course, to wipe out the deficit, to entirely wipe it out, and to rapidly pay down the debt. So that's the first message that people need to get.
But if that happens, Jack, I mean, Jeff Bezos won't be able to rent out Venice for his wedding. He'll have to use, I don't know, Lake Holcomb or something instead. I mean, think of the poor man's wedding.
You really think that 2% or 5% on somebody that's that wealthy is going to change their lifestyle a little bit?
Not even a bit. Not even a bit. He'd have to have seven yachts instead of eight here, Jack. We're up against the news, but thank you for the point. It is extremely well taken. And Trigvi, in closing, I think there have been many failures of Democratic and progressive messaging over the years. On that list that nobody talks about is failure to explain why you want a progressive tax system, you know, that it has marginal rates. When we talk about, you know, a 50% marginal rate on incomes above $1 million, it doesn't mean 50% of the $1 million. It means 50% of, you know, that first dollar above $1 million. Everything that Jack just described, we could do, and we'd still have as many billionaires as we would today.
Well, it's the perversion on the right. You know, you have this perversion of the Lafler curve, right? Like, it's taken as an article of faith that you cut taxes, it grows growth. That isn't what Art Lafler said.
No.
But it's this perversion. I mean, I heard Scott Walker say that one time. Paul Ryan will say it too, right? Well, Reagan taught us if you cut taxes, you increase growth. Well, first of all, that's debatable. It is true that if you cut them from 90% to 50, you will. But once there's a law of diminishing returns, but it's taken as an article of faith, and Democrats haven't pushed back enough on it.
Oh, faith.
They need to make it about fairness.
Yes. Oh, for everybody, for all of their constituents, not just the ones that donate to them. Trigvi, thanks for playing in the sandbox with me. I guess we got to turn things back over to Todd.
Anytime, Pat.
If you will. Aaron Zomers, thank you, of course, for all the help. And you can catch me again weekday mornings from 6 to 9 across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Todd's back.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.